Hey, Tom Tilley here. It's a Friday shake-up where the whole nation chimes in with their say on the biggest stories of the week. Today, it's dating outside your scene, reconciliation, and the poo roadie.
You can't tiptoe around asking for someone's poo.
National Reconciliation Week provides a focus for all Australians to reflect on reconciliation.
Let the private school twats do their own shit and we'll do our own shit.
Triple J.
Do our own shit? Which story was that one about? Love to hear from you. Give me a call. Call in on whatever story you want to talk about. Give me a buzz right now. 1-300-055-36. Hanging out with you today is Indigenous comedian from Perth, Craig Quartermain. Quarters, how you doing?
Kai, tell him not too bad, man.
Great to have you here. Our other guest is Ray Johnson, editor of Junkie and a Wiradjuri woman from Western New South Wales. Ray, welcome back to Hack.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolute pleasure. We're hitting the end of Reconciliation Week and there's been so much happening in the political space for Indigenous Australia and reconciliation this week, starting with our first ever Indigenous Affairs Minister, Ken Wyatt.
Hack, the new Indigenous Affairs Minister Ken Wyatt has made history after being sworn in during a ceremony at Government House.
I, Kenneth George Wyatt, do swear that I will well and truly serve the people of Australia.
Your mum was a member of the Stolen Generations. What do you think she would have made of all of this?
She would have been immensely proud, but I know she would have shed a lot of tears.
It's been a long time for an Indigenous Australian to sit around this room, particularly in the portfolio that you now hold.
It's a milestone for Indigenous Australians.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it was a beautiful moment and a long time coming. Ken Wyatt is now the Minister for Indigenous Australians. It'll be fascinating to see what he can do in that role. Love to get your reaction to it, as well as your thoughts on the right way forward to find reconciliation. Give me a call, 1-300-055-36. Ray, what did you make of that appointment?
I think it's the right appointment. I think to have an Indigenous person in an Indigenous Affairs role, or you know, the Minister for Indigenous Australians, is of utmost importance. And the fact that it hasn't happened until this point isn't exactly shocking, but it is pretty awful that it hasn't occurred until now. So I think it's important.
Yeah, and Craig, he's a fellow Western Australian. Were you proud of that?
Yeah, I mean, just to echo what Ray just said, I mean, let's think about it. When he was 3 minutes after he was born, he was already more qualified than all the previous ones. So, you know, it's a good thing. And Ken puts me in a weird spot, man, because his party ideologically I don't agree with, but he's a good dude. And as much as it's hard for me to admit, hopefully he's going to do a good job.
And Ray, the portfolio was renamed slightly from Indigenous Affairs to the Minister for Indigenous Australians. What did you make of that?
Yeah, there's been no real explanation as to why that's happened. So everyone's just kind of throwing their hat into the ring to say what they think it means. You know, it might be a reflection of, you know, how broad it is, you know, how much ground he has to cover now. Or it might just be a reflection of how Indigenous people are seen within the parliament.
Yeah, and one of the other big questions the nation is grappling with when it comes to reconciliation is how to move forward on constitutional recognition or the Uluru Statement, which came out 2 years ago, where over 200 Indigenous leaders agreed on a statement calling for a constitutionally enshrined Indigenous voice to the parliament. And to change the constitution, most of you would need to vote for it in a referendum, which would be a massive deal. And as you're about to hear, when the Uluru Statement was made, the Prime Minister at the time, Malcolm Turnbull, rejected what it was calling for, but it looks like it's back on the agenda under Scott Morrison. And in Hack, we actually read the Uluru Statement in full this week. It's quite moving and it's really good to listen to those words and think about what they mean. Here's part of that statement and the debate around it.
Hack. We gathered at the 2017 National Constitutional Convention, coming from all points of the southern sky, make this statement from the heart.
Proportionately, we are the most incarcerated people on earth. We are not innately criminal people. Our children are alienated from their families at unprecedented rates. This cannot be because we have no love for them.
We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and take a rightful place in our country.
You can hear that hope in the Uluru Statement, and it really moves people. And this is something that we can do, those proposals that it makes.
Prior in Melbourne, you actually heard Thomas speak. What was that like?
Yeah, it was really inspirational. So, yeah, there's a lot to be done.
Well, I don't believe that would be able to be passed at a referendum.
The power now lies in the hands of Prime Minister Scott Morrison, and he's backflipped.
This remains an important issue.
We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country.
We invite you to walk with us.
in a movement of the Australian people for a better future.
On Triple J.
The final part of the Uluru Statement there. Love to hear from you. Would you vote yes in a referendum if it was based around the Uluru Statement? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. It's calling for a constitutionally enshrined Indigenous voice to Parliament, some kind of body that would advise Parliament on the way policies affect Indigenous Australians. Love to hear your thoughts on that. Would you vote for it? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Ray, what do you think the right way to move forward on the Uluru Statement is at this point?
I feel like the government should be accepting the Uluru Statement and taking steps to put its recommendations in place. I think what's being asked for in the Uluru Statement is pretty simple. It's a seat at the table. It's just the chance to speak on issues that affect Indigenous people. Before these policies are made for us in that kind of paternalistic way that they have been for the past 200 odd years.
So how would you suggest they move forward? Because it hasn't been determined exactly what that Indigenous voice to Parliament might look like. It was mischaracterised by Malcolm Turnbull and Barnaby Joyce and other detractors as a third chamber that it somehow would need to go to that Indigenous voice to get passed as legislation, which is not what they're asking for. Do you have a sense of how much detail we'll need to get to before we ask Australians to vote on this?
I actually don't think that there's a lot of detail that needs to be worked out at all. As I said, it's a really simple request that's being asked here. It's to get 200 people together, representatives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people from all over the country, to agree on something like this and to draft something like this and present it to Parliament, and for it to be effectively ignored for 2 years, I think is a bit disgusting. And I think we need to be taking action on it now, because policies continue to be made for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people without their input or involvement. And with a lot of the problems facing communities, communities have the answers. The government's just not going to them.
Craig, at the most recent federal election 2 weeks ago now, a lot of people were surprised that people voted in a fairly careful or conservative fashion, not embracing Labor's push for change. Do you have much faith that Australians would support a referendum changing the constitution around our relationship with Indigenous Australians?
Not really. I mean, but at the same time too, I want to hear the counter argument to pushing forward with that sort of recommendation. Why not? Just on that, the federal election though, can I just shout out to Warren Mundine as the president of the Labor Party? Like, to go in and lose the seat of Gilmore for the Liberal Party has got to be one of the most gangster, homeland, ISIS level cell.
I was so conspiracy theorists.
The most Labor thing to do, man. That is gangster, Warren. Well done. But as far as the pushing this through, there is no logical reason for it not to be done.
When should it be done? Because even Ken Wyatt's saying it probably won't happen in his first term as Indigenous Australians Minister.
Oh, he's just trying to stop. Like, could you imagine the reaction if he came out all positive and like was like, "Yeah, we're going to push this through"? People are already scared, so I get it. You want to approach this stuff slowly, but he's got 3 years, so why not?
On the text line, the question why we should be asking is there not already an Indigenous representative in Parliament? Well, we do have Indigenous representatives, but finally we got an Indigenous Affairs Minister. Love to hear your reaction as well. Send us a text 0439 757 555. Craig, your answer there goes for the question of, I guess, the level of pressure that's going to be on Ken Wyatt in this role. How hard will it be, with the expectations of Indigenous Australians, weighing on his shoulders?
There's going to be personal pressure for him for wanting to achieve stuff, but there's not been much of a precedent set as far as a bar that he's got to reach, let's be honest. Like, if he, not to be too pessimistic about it, but he's got a pretty clean slate as far as, what he's going to be able to achieve. I think a lot of the pressure is just going to come from, he's probably internally battling his own party as well as the opposition. So
yeah, that'd be tricky. But what about in general when an Indigenous person stands up as a leader? Is there an intense pressure from the Indigenous community, Ray?
Oh, look, I think that there would be pressure that you'd put on yourself, really, to be able to represent your people accurately and appropriately and truthfully in a system that was designed to exclude or to create laws that were about people but not with them. So I think naturally that comes with a whole lot of pressure. You're fighting against a system that was never built for you to be a part of.
Yeah, we love an Indigenous leader in this country. Just ask Adam Goods.
Courtney in Canberra, which way would you vote in a referendum on constitutional recognition or a constitutionally enshrined voice to Parliament for Indigenous Australians?
Well, I would totally be all for it. I'm a Ngunnawal woman, so I'm a proud, you know, my nation is Canberra and surrounding, and I totally want someone to go out there and fight for my people. And I'm really young. I'm 21 and, you know, I need that person, that elder or, you know, that representative to lead my young people in my community to have the best life for us because, you know, we're constantly, I work in healthcare and I'm a registered nurse and we need someone to take that stand to make a better life, no matter which way it goes, because our people are suffering and we need a voice.
So who are you looking to for that? Is it Ken White, the Indigenous Australians Minister, or is it an Indigenous voice enshrined in the Constitution?
I think a bit of both, to be honest. I think we do need all areas covered because, you know, we can't just have one area and then someone disagree with that later on. I think it's really important that we have Aboriginal people representing us throughout all avenues because we really need to express our concerns and our importance that we are the First Nations people and we do matter and we need to be treated like we do matter in our own country because at the moment it doesn't seem like that at all.
Well said, Courtney. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Jackson in Willoughby says, I would vote yes because as a straight white male, I have always had more than adequate representation in the parliament, a luxury that no other demographic has enjoyed. Thank you, Jackson. Brendan in Bendigo, you say, the sooner the better to engage with Indigenous Australians. The longer we wait, the tougher the issue will be to fix. Jimmy, which way would you vote on a constitutionally enshrined voice if it came up in a referendum?
Oh, I've been pulling my hair out for the last 5 minutes of you guys talking. We want treaty. We don't want constitutional recognition. You know, sovereignty was never ceded, and we don't want anything to do with his, you know, the gubbers.
Ray, what do you say to that?
Yeah, look, treaty is ideal. It really, really is. If
you, at the end of the day, the only people who profit from constitutional recognition will be these corrupt land councils who are only a select few families actually reap the rewards of these benefits.
What, you know, what impact is it going to have on land councils?
No, I'm saying that it's very similar to land councils and native title, where what happened with native title was that only a select few families that had controls of these land councils were profited.
Okay, and
right.
Yeah, but how does that relate to, I guess, this debate about a constitutionally enshrined voice to Parliament? You think that will only benefit a few sort of powerful families 100%. Within the Indigenous community?
100%. Well, why are we going to the government and saying we want constitutional recognition? We're going to our invaders and we're saying they want you to recognise us? Sovereignty was never ceded.
Craig, what do you say to that?
I completely agree with the way that systems are handed over and then all of a sudden people are told to, like the land councils, yeah, it does benefit a very small number of people that access those sort of things. So as far as, yeah, the treaty would carry a lot more weight.
But what about Jimmy's criticism of this constitutional recognition or constitutionally enshrined voice process and having to ask, the invaders for that?
Oh, look, completely ideologically, no, for sure. I completely agree with that. But I also know that, you know, Australia is in such a position now. We're almost getting past the point where we're not racist anymore. We're actually just purely classist as a country. And we just, unfortunately, we don't carry enough power. You can argue the moralities of it all the time, but we don't have any weight to throw around in these sort of discussions when it comes to, yeah, our hands are tied, unfortunately.
Jimmy, thanks for the call.
Cheers, bro.
Good on you. Worried Ken Wright is set up to fail with expectations being placed on him like Peter Garrett with Environment Minister. Chris from Brisbane on the Uluru statement. I think the idea is good. It seems like a no-brainer, but the real problem will be who is going to fill this body. And I guess that will be an interesting process to work out who will actually be or represent that Indigenous voice. Another debate coming up in the Indigenous space is the national anthem. And two Indigenous rugby league players have said that they don't want to join the singing of Advance Australia Fair in next week's State of Origin.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the Australian National Anthem.
Australians let us rejoice.
Indigenous players from both Origin teams have now joined a national anthem boycott at next week's series opener in Brisbane.
We are young and free is very much that reference to being a young nation within the past 200 years, so no acknowledgement there.
The players have copped some criticism online.
Yeah, it sort of doesn't represent myself and my family.
On Triple J.
Love to hear your reaction to that story. Do you think this will turn into a heated debate like it did in the US over Colin Kaepernick, the American football player who kneeled during the national anthem? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Ray, what do you think about these two players making this stand?
I think it's right for them. They've said it's right for their family. I understand where they're coming from entirely, and quite frankly, I agree with them. This isn't an anthem that represents all Australians, and they're just standing up and saying that, or even just quietly, silently saying that. And they have every right to do that.
Craig, how do you feel about the Australian National Anthem?
It's never had enough bass for me, Tom. That's been the biggest issue. That's why a lot of black people... Yeah, look, more black people would get behind it if there was just a bit of a snare, but... no, and it doesn't represent... every time I'm on radio, I feel like I'm always saying I want to be like New Zealand because their anthem is such a representation. See, listen, Ray, even if Ray agrees.
But that's even it. You get on a plane, you're going to New Zealand, you're listening to, you know, the safety instructions told in English and Māori. Like, yeah. When are we going to have that much pride in our First Nations people in this country? I want to see that happening, and I want to see that reflected in our national anthem.
Yeah. Chad, what do you think about the national anthem?
I think it's really complicated because, like, Indigenous people, their sovereignty was never ceded, and there's no recognition of that. There's no treaty. And, you know, we talk about being young and free. Well, the fact is Indigenous young people aren't free. Indigenous young people are drastically overrepresented in incarceration numbers, for starters. And, you know, Indigenous young people are killing themselves at an alarming rate all over the country. So, you know, I don't really think Australia has done a terribly good job of treating our Indigenous brothers and sisters as people that matter. So why should our anthem matter to them? I think it's totally disingenuous to just kick up a stink about something when the vast majority of Australians haven't had the time to think about the truth of our history and how bloody our history is and the genocide they've suffered. And until we actually start a conversation that is honest about how stuffed up our history is.
Bit of passion's all right on a Friday,
you know
what
I mean? Yeah, no. Sorry, it's just like I'm a white social work student, and I've just done a whole subject on Indigenous studies for Charles Sturt University, and I had no idea how messed up it was. And I did a subject, and it blew my mind away.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how, I guess, those realities actually play out in this debate around the national anthem and whether a lot of people share your view, Chad, and they're like, well, yeah, Indigenous young people aren't, the young ones aren't free. In fact, they're locked up at higher rates than non-Indigenous people, and whether people really accept that argument. When it went down in the US, it really didn't go down that way, and you had the president jumping in, slamming Colin Kaepernick and other people that knelt during the national anthem, and then eventually Colin Kaepernick got a Nike sponsorship, so, you know... Who knows where this could end up? You're listening to Triple J's Hack Program.
Hack. I now know in hindsight that my brain was being slowly kind of poisoned.
Triple J.
You're listening to Hack. Hanging out with you today is Ray Johnson from Junkie and Craig Quatermain. He's a comedian from WA. It's Friday Shake Up. And forget the politics and all those other big stories of the week, supposedly big stories. The biggest story was the Pooh Roadie. And the Boy and Bear comeback story. In case you missed it, check out the video on our Facebook page or Instagram TV. Basically, what happened is the lead singer of Boy and Bear, Dave Hosking, has been smashed over the last few years with a mystery illness. He couldn't tour. He hasn't been able to write new music. They haven't released anything for 4 years. It turns out fecal transplants have been his saviour. But to get them as much as he needs them, which is every day, he's had to develop his own DIY processing system and find a daily poo donor. He found a guy through a letterbox drop. Then another problem arose. What happens when you go away on tour or to record an album in America? Well, that's when the poo donor becomes the poo roadie.
Hack. So you met him through a letterbox drop, yeah. And then 6 to 9 months later, he's travelling to America, following you around, pooing every day, so you can record an album.
Yeah, that's it.
What a relationship.
Yeah.
Triple J.
My gut bacteria was in a fairly severe state of imbalance. I remember literally, like, screaming into my, like, pillow as, like, these waves of... It just felt like my nervous system was, like, just being turned up on me.
So this is the lab, Dave?
Yeah, this is where the magic happens, I guess. It's amazing how little imagination is required. It's literally just a blender, saline, and then eventually I'll sieve it into, like, a container. And then once it's in that container, I'll pour it into these bottles.
So you squeeze it out of that bottle...
Yep.
..up your ass.
Up my ass.
On Triple J.
Yep, up his ass. It was incredible radio, an amazing story. And Ashley, your husband's your poo roadie.
He is, yes.
Oh, wow. Talk us through that one.
Well, I was suffering for a long time and I went and saw Professor Brody at the Centre for Digestive Diseases. And, they diagnosed me with something called C. diff. And that meant that a FMT treatment would be the best thing for me. And during that time, my husband decided to become a donor and... actually to do that process, though, was about $10,000. So we couldn't really afford that. And because he had all the checks cleared, we decided to do it at home.
Right, okay. So it was $10,000 to get it done through the clinic. So that's why you opted to do the DIY solution with your husband?
That's it, yep.
Right, so what's that like? Has that been a bit of a weird vibe in your relationship? Has it killed the magic at all?
We don't tell everyone, and I guess we try not to think about it too much, but I think after you know the research and the benefits around it, it's not so hard to think about that you did that. There is a little bit of, I guess, embarrassment that comes with it when you really think about what's involved. You're essentially putting someone else's poo into you. It's just what it does is it develops a better ecosystem for you. So mine, they believe, was attacked by possibly antibiotics and it just kind of ruined any good gut health I had. And by putting someone with good gut health and their sample in there, it kind of developed a better environment for me.
And the great thing about Dave's story and him being brave enough to tell it was that it sort of broke down a little bit of a taboo around this topic, because still humans are somehow weirded out about talking about poo. We still laugh about it, which is so immature, even though we're all grown adults. Are you finding people are fairly receptive to this? Are more people hearing about it and being shocked when they find out what you're doing with your husband?
Yeah, I mean, initially we didn't tell anyone. It was like a covert operation that we were doing. But with time and I guess more advocacy around it, we have started to tell some people, and particularly people that talk about, well, I've got issues with my stomach. I refer them all to Professor Brody or talk about doing a fecal matter transplant. There are risks associated with it, doing it at home. So we warn people of that, but the benefits outweigh it for me. We were just so desperate. Well, I was so desperate to live a normal life because I wasn't.
Yeah, well, probably a few 100,000 people are learning about it right now and the taboo's being broken thanks to you, Ashley. So thanks so much for joining us and all the best.
No worries. Thanks so much, Tom.
Christy, you actually work for a charity in South Australia that's storing poo samples.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Tell us about the work you're doing.
Okay, so I work for the Hospital Research Foundation, and we fund hospitals around South Australia for vital medical research and better patient outcomes. And one of our partners is something called the Biome Bank, which is effectively a poo bank.
That's amazing. So is that serving lots of people? Because what we've heard from Dave from Boy and Bear, and we just heard from Ashley, is that I guess getting it from a more clinical source has proven to be quite hard, and so they're having to go for the DIY solution. Is there, a growth in the scale of services that clinics are offering people?
Yeah, so this is the first bank of its kind in Australia. And it's all set up there for them, and they take samples from, worthy people or people who have good gut flora, and they store them, they freeze them down to about minus 80 degrees, and then they can be used, you know, at any time.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah, it's great to hear that, I guess, the clinics are finding new ways to, I guess, serve lots of people so that, you know, not everyone has to go to this, you know, length of, you know, letterbox dropping to find a poo donor like Dave did and taking them on tour to Nashville. Christy, thanks so much for calling. Rob from Byron has chimed in, as per usual. I predict the new Boy and Bear song will be number 2 in the next Hottest 100.
Toffee is a new dating app for people who are privately educated.
On Triple J.
Let's change the subject. Toffee, the dating app for private school kids. Interesting one. It raises the broader question. Do you like to date people who are similar to you, or do you like to get a bit of, you know, variety, the spice of life into your relationship? Here's part of our story from this week on the Toffee dating app.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a bit exclusive. Oh, my God.
Let the private school twats do their own shit and we'll do our own shit.
Kind of just, like, keeps them in their own circle. If it removes them from any apps I'm using, that'd be a good thing.
And it goes a little something like this.
Lydia Davis is the founder of Toffee. Lydia, there's a perception amongst lots of people that anyone that talks too much about the school they went to or jumps straight to that at the start of a conversation is potentially a very boring person. Have you got a whole bunch of boring people signed onto this app?
No.
I went to private school, but I probably wouldn't use it, to be honest. All of my boyfriends have been from public schools, to be honest. Private school people are too posh for me.
I'll speak your phone.
Do inter-class marriages help make society fairer? And in a way, does this app push back on that?
People tend to date people from similar backgrounds to them.
Anyway.
Usually anyway. So to an extent, this app is kind of formalising what's already there.
On Triple J.
Ray, what do you think of this dating app?
Oh, look, I mean, I went to a public school that was literally built on toxic waste, so I do not belong on this app in any way, shape or form. I do think that it's really kind of gross and classist and a bit sad of people to not even consider, you know, people that they believe are lesser than them as a potential partner.
What about the fact that these people are likely to date other people from private schools anyway, and this app just kind of, I don't know, helps that process or speeds it up?
I think it just makes it all that more visible and in front of you and, I don't know, easier to bag out, I think.
Really. That's for sure. Craig, here you go.
All I can think is that for the women that are going to sign up to this app, for the young ladies, you're about to join a dating app full of young men that never get told no.
Oh.
And that is just yuck. Just yep. The thought of that is just wrong.
Yeah, interesting point. Someone's just texting in on our last story. Unfortunately, FMT didn't work for my gut issues. Pretty nasty thing to have to do, not to mention expensive. So I was devastated when it didn't work for me. All right, that is all we have time for the Friday shake-up. Craig Quartermain, it's been great having you back on the show from Perth. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, Tom.
And Ray Johnson, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, time for a little special announcement.
Triple J.
So the Hack team is losing someone quite special today, the one and only Stephen Stockwell, Hack's Brisbane reporter for almost 6 years. He's heading to a new challenge at The Signal, which is an ABC News daily podcast. He's been a standout member of this team. He's part of the voice. He's part of the brain. Definitely part of the sense of humour of this show. Here's a taste of some of his magic.
Remember how I said there's everyone from AFL players to politicians on this site? Well, there's radio presenters too.
Right.
How you doing?
Yeah, good.
So you know that circumcision website?
I'm not on there, am I?
Tom Tilley totally is. His post has been up there since 2016.
Hey, mate.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. How are you?
Yeah, good,
and
thanks.
As much as I hate capitalism, I love revenge.
I told you I'm not talking about it, right? Now, don't you understand English?
Bob, you spoke up there about farmer suicides. I mean, are you worried at all about the young gay people that might take their own lives because they don't feel represented? Bob?
Just ran off.
And Bob's just wandered away from me. It might be the first time someone has actually stood up and just stormed out of an interview, to be honest. I know you're a curious guy, so to put your mind at ease, I'm in the average science range, and I think, you know, I like to think towards the top, but I haven't actually measured it in years.
I did not ask that.
If you're playing along at home, though, the average size range is about 12.5 to 16 centimetres, or in the old money, 5.5 to 6.5, 7 inches long, and about 75% of guys fit into that range. But mine certainly seems to get the job done, though.
Too much information for almost 6 years. Well done, Stephen Stockwell. You can catch him on The Signal from next week. Thank you so much, you crazy Queenslander, for everything you've done on this show and for the Hack audience, informing them and entertaining them on a whole range of issues. All the best for the future.
Hack on Triple J.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I'll catch you Monday. Bye.